The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Let's do it.
Welcome, Chiefs Kingdom, to a Victory Monday edition of the Arrowhead Pride podcast that we like to call Out of Structure. I'm Matt Sagner here with Ron Cobb Jr. It's nice to have this podcast on a Monday after a Chiefs win. The Chiefs went into Philadelphia, came out with a 42-30 victory. Andy Reid's 100th victory with the Chiefs, first head coach ever to do it with two separate teams. A lot of takeaways this week, but who better to hear from than Ron, who was there firsthand. Ron, tell us what you saw.
Yeah, I survived. I survived the hellhole that apparently Philadelphia fans are, according to everyone I've talked to before the game. It was funny. Even in Philly, because I was actually there for the weekend, I have a friend, shout out my guy CJ Perez, center at Temple. They got a big win Saturday. We visited him for the weekend, and all weekend, everyone you run into, bartenders, Uber drivers are telling you, oh, don't even wear your Chiefs jersey. Don't even wear any red. You're gonna get stuff thrown at you. and they were really nice. They were very nice fans. It was like, I would imagine that's how Arrowhead is. You know, they were just all having fun, giving us a little crap, but you know, they love Andy. That's what I kept hearing. They love Andy. And so it was cool to see him get his 100th win. So good times. Nice to see a win. You know, it's been a couple weeks since we've seen one, crazy enough, but yeah, let's get into this.
Well, the Chiefs got back to 500 this week with the win. Now they're at 2-2, climbing back into respectability, at least with a victory that was fairly decisive, all things considered. Sure, there were some, you know, it was pretty close throughout until the fourth quarter when the Chiefs pulled away. The final score was only as close as it was because of a garbage time touchdown on Philly's part. But what other takeaways did you have from the game, Ron?
Yeah, first takeaway, I got to imagine, was just the fact that the offense was, there was no punts. And I know that was good on the other teams, on the Eagles part too, to not punt, bad on our defense. But the offense was just unstoppable, especially on the ground, especially in the run game. But the Tyreek thing, Tyreek going off for the 10 catches, 185 yards and 3 touchdowns. I mean, all three of those touchdowns were impressive in their own way. He had some other great catches that weren't touchdowns. He almost had one on the first drive, had one down the sideline too. That was a great catch on, a perfect pass by Mahomes. And then that dagger at the end, it was nice to see a dagger finally. This offense hasn't put the dagger in the coffin of an opponent all season. We haven't seen it in a long time, actually. It was great to see Tyreek actually put the dagger in a team, get a 20-point lead and kind of have a comfortable win for once.
You bet. Tyreek's day was one of my big takeaways as well. And I noted this in the winners and losers column on arrowheadpride.com, but Tyreek Hill showed off all aspects of his game on Sunday, including really route running. I thought he put some corners on the spin cycle, as the kids say, in a couple of those moves. He had some really, really impressive moves to get open, really sharp, really crisp routes. I think that's an overlooked aspect of his game, but an amazing performance by Tyreek Hill. Matt McMullen of Chiefs.com had a great stat on Twitter. Tyreek had 10 catches, 185 yards, and 3 touchdowns. He's the first guy to do that since Tyreek Hill last year in week 12. The only other player in NFL history to do that twice or more than once is Jerry Rice. So pretty good company. Really, really impressive day for Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, it was. And it was an impressive day for him, but not for Travis Kelce, right? It was kind of weird, a weird day for Travis Kelce. Didn't have a lot of catches, a lot of yards. But the ways he did make it, the impact in the game was awesome. And he deserves an Oscar award for his acting during the Jody Fortson touchdown. By the way, Jody Fortson, two touchdowns? Talking about a scoring machine.
Yeah. All he does is catch touchdowns.
Apparently. That it was a great play call, great play design. It sounded like Kelce actually made up that play or, you know, had the idea for that play in the press conference. That's what Mahomes said. Yeah, acts like there's miscommunication. I actually just saw Harold Kuntz on Twitter tweet out a nice clip of Mahomes during that play too. And he did a pretty good job of acting like he was very frustrated with Mahomes as well, or with Kelce as well. And you could see the defensive backs were kind of looking away as the ball was snapped, you know, and then the shovel pass to Fortson. So, and then he also was the decoy on the Clyde, the little Clyde touchdown too, at the beginning of the game. Mahomes looked like he was going to throw to Kelce in the flat and then came back on the shovel pass. So, yeah. Kelce, you know, he's not always going to put up the big yards. Big, it seems like he always does, but of course, when he doesn't, he's going to be a decoy and get his other teammates touchdowns. That was just, it was great to see Kelce kind of, you know, be cool with being selfless. And we know he's selfless and everything, but it was cool to see it kind of come to fruition in a game.
What I loved about that is you know, if you're a Chiefs fan, you know that that's a fake because Kelce is never going to be running around in a panic because he doesn't know what the play is. That dude will just line up and go get open. If he has no idea what the play call is, he's still going to just line up, get himself open, and somehow Mahomes is going to know exactly where he is. So I love that play. I thought that was hilarious. As soon as he started throwing his arms up in the air, I'm like, oh, he's faking that. Absolutely. So you may give him an Oscar for that, for his dramatic acting. You might give the comedic Oscar to Chris Jones trying to recover a fumble. The yakety yak music should have been playing on that one as he attempts to recover a fumble on the Legarius Sneed strip sack and kicks it, flops it around, bounces it off the referee's head, and somehow manages to not recover a fumble at the beginning or at the end of the first half. You know, some may argue that he should have just fallen on it. I kind of like that he at least attempted to score on that play. I don't mind him being aggressive there, but that turned out to be a comedic act.
Yeah, we got to get like Rocky. You know, Rocky's making the gifts for you. We got to get him on the yakety sax over that clip and see how funny that looks. the thing with the Jones fumble, though, like you said, you know, maybe he should have fallen on it because they would have had time for a field goal at the end of the half. But you also, as a defensive lineman in that situation, there was what, like 10 seconds before the snap or maybe a little more, I guess. You probably don't know for sure if there even is time on the clock. And you wouldn't want to just fall on a ball if you can't do anything with the ball afterwards. You want to try to score on that play because it's the last play of the half. So, and also on defense all the time, you want to scoop and score as much as possible if you can. But if it was maybe a different time in the game, maybe he does just after that first fumbling with the ball, maybe he does just jump on it and not even, you know, think about it. But it would have been nice to see a big boy touchdown. We haven't seen one of those in a while. I think it might be his only touchdown, but I just remember that pick six he had on Blake Bortles a couple years ago. That was fun, or 3 years ago. So, but yeah, you know, Chris Jones, you know, that was kind of his highlight of the day. He didn't have too many, you know, big highlights or anything, but
yeah,
it was a fun highlight.
That was a lot of fun. You know what else was fun is watching this offensive line block, especially in the run game. Those guys were just moving people and making gigantic holes for Clyde Edwards-Helaire to run through. I thought Clyde had a really good day once again, but I think a lot of running backs could have had success behind that line yesterday.
Yeah, there were some wide open holes. When he got to the secondary, the second level of the defense, there was no one around him at times. That's also not only just the offensive line getting to that second level, but I think you got to give credit to Andy Reid. Without watching the film, I'm not sure exactly what he was doing, but there had to have been something where he's taking, you know, he's making linebackers kind of, you know, think they have to be to the flat or be outside or something away from where the run's going. Cause unless they were just running away from the run, sometimes there was no one around once he got to the second level. And so it was a great rushing performance. I'm surprised he didn't get more than 100 yards Although that's the other thing. Daryl Williams had a pretty good game too. They kind of rotated them in pretty evenly, and Daryl had a really good game. He had a few big runs too. So all in all, run blocking was great. Pass blocking could have been a little better, but it was still good. And you obviously, you know, it's good enough for Mahomes to get 5 touchdowns and get the passer. I think it was about 135 passer rating. You know, there were some mishaps. You know, Lucas Niang had a sack that got, you know, taken away because of a defensive holding call that was pretty bad. Josh Sweat beat him really quick. But all in all, offensive line had a really good game against a very tough defensive front for sure.
We talk about Clyde only I'm doing air quotes here, having 100 yards in the game. Well, he only had 14 carries on the day. So, yeah. You know, that's a really efficient day and a 7.3 clip for Clyde. You know, I said that maybe with a little bit in jest that a lot of running backs could do well behind that offensive line yesterday. Clyde definitely took what was there plus some. I think we got some stats to back that up, but we'll talk about that and the offensive line more in just a minute. The other thing that I took away was, once again, for the third time in 4 games so far this season, the other wide receivers, the non-Tyreek Hill wide receivers, had absolutely had basically no impact on this game. They've clearly put Mecole Hardman back into this sort of gadget player role where he's catching balls around or behind the line of scrimmage, and or he had a couple of really effective runs this week, but nobody else really got anything. No catches for DeMarcus Robinson, nothing for Marcus Kemp. Byron Pringle had a couple of catches, you know, nothing to write home about. Really, you know, in the development and the news early on in the day was that Josh Gordon was going to be available sooner than maybe we thought, and maybe even as soon as next week. And that's to the surprise of many people. I was sort of wondering to myself, how would that affect these secondary receivers on the Chiefs? Are they going to all of a sudden feel that pressure, feel the footsteps of Josh Gordon, his big 6'3", 7% body fat footprints coming behind them? And is that going to lead to a breakout day for some of these secondary receivers, or are they going to struggle in the face of that kind of pressure? Really, I don't think either of those two things happen. It seemed like just another day, a fairly invisible and quiet day for those secondary targets. And it makes you wonder if there's a good reason why the Chiefs are bringing in Josh Gordon.
Yeah. And the thing is, the Chiefs used a lot of multi-tight end sets on Sunday. I think that was a big part of their game plan. I thought that would be a part of their game plan. It was part of my 5 things to watch, was using those 12 and 13 personnels. We saw Noah Gray for probably the most we've seen him all season. I didn't see for sure how many snaps he got yet, but I'm sure it was the most, because he was in there quite a bit. Noah Gray actually should have caught a touchdown. Mahomes scrambled around, found him in the back of the end zone, and it just went off his hands. But for the receivers, though, it does just seem like you mentioned, Mecole back to his kind of just being a gadget player. He's great in that role, though. I mean, he is a great player in the, you know, that reverse that we had. It seemed like every single lineman leading him downfield, and he almost broke it all the way. He had Niang and Brown and Creed Humphrey all running downfield with him. I mean, you think that would have maybe been a touchdown, but it was a great play, and he's great in that role. It's just, you need him to be more than that. You'd think he'd be more than that by now, and he's just not. And so it's kind of tough, and no other receiver is really stepping up. So yeah, we'll see what Josh Gordon does.
And yeah, that's a good point about them being tight end heavy, though. I'm looking at the snap counts now. You're right. Noah Gray had 27% of the snaps, 18, which is the same number as Blake Bell had as well. So they were getting those secondary tight ends on the field, and Jody Fortson had 15 snaps, so 22%. So all three of them right in that same range, which tells you that there were a lot of 3 tight end sets.
Yeah, and so I do think that was kind of a game plan of theirs, because the Philadelphia Eagles' second level of the defense, their linebackers, if you think our linebackers are bad, they might be even worse. And that's saying something, and maybe they're not worse. But the Eagles, that is definitely the weak point of their defense. And so taking advantage of that by passing a lot from the tight end, you know, having a lot of linebackers on the field because you have so many tight ends. But the other thing too, with Josh Gordon, you mentioned that, you know, we hear the reports from Ian Rappaport that he could be ready as soon as week 5. You know, I hate to say it, but I almost think maybe that's a little bit of the Chiefs just kind of knowing that they need him right now, and they're kind of almost pushing, you know, kind of pushing the envelope a little bit, like, hey, we kind of need him to be here week five more than, you know, he's actually, you know, 100% ready to be in the offense, know the offense, you know, all well, because we know the offense is going to be hard to learn, and he's been here for less than a week, and I'm sure there was talks before that, but it kind of just shows you how little confidence they have right now in their secondary wide receivers.
Yeah, I think that it does. Well, moving on to sort of a new segment, I think now that we've been through four games that at least last year would have been a quarter of the season if you divide the season up that way. Now with 17 games, it's, let's call it 38, 39% of the season without doing the math. But now that we have a sample size, let's talk about some stats for the Chiefs, maybe some that we may have missed or maybe surprising. So, Ron, I know you did some research. Give me a few offensive stats, and let's see what we can take away from this sample size so far this season.
Yeah, we'll just start off with a few basic ones. And I think the big one right now is this yards per play stat. They, you know, yards per play is the most efficient or the smallest way to look at efficiency, right? Because it's yards per single play, not per game, not per drive. It's every play. And they lead the entire league in it. And they lead, they have the lead on the second team. As much like that range between the first and the second team is as much as it is between the second and eighth team right now. So they are kind of ahead of way ahead of the game right now in yards per play. That just shows you how good their offense is. They're second in scoring offense overall, first in points per drive too. But here's the thing, the least amount of drives total this year so far, they have had the least amount of possessions this year. That's pretty mind blowing. I think that has something to do with the defense. And even with the turnovers, which is the second highest rate in the league right now, they still have the second highest rate of drives ending in a score right now. So just kind of shows you how dominant they've been. Really, the only time they've been stopped is when they shoot themselves in the foot. And this offense is going to keep being dominant, especially, you know, maybe if Josh Gordon comes in and plays well, the offensive line is going to keep getting better. Yeah, Stags. Those stats just kind of tell you that this offense has been as dominant as we can expect and as it ever has been. It's just, you know, the turnovers have kind of, you know, made it maybe seem as not as dominant as before.
Yeah, there's some big numbers there. I mean, the yards per play, like you said, the offensive efficiency, you saw it this week. This team was moving the ball at will. There was really – they had long, sustained drives this week, maybe more than what we've seen from Chiefs teams in the last few years. This team can move the ball whenever they want to, and now they can do it on the ground or in the air. Which is, again, something that maybe has been missing from this team in the past. And then, yeah, that number about the percentage of drives that end in a score, for them to be the second highest on that list while also being the second highest in the most turnovers, that's mind-blowing, because you think about how efficient, how many of those drives would have ended in a score had they not been turnovers, because a lot of those turnovers have been in the red zone. Or at least on the, you know, on the opposite, the opposition side of the field. So there is a really high percentage chance that if the Chiefs get the ball, they're going to score. And that's a good feeling. This offense is as dominant, really, arguably, as it ever has been, or at least is trending in that direction. All they have to do is stop the turnovers, and they're going to win 9 times out of 10. And no matter what the defense does.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And off the top of our head, we can just think of last week against the Chargers, the first three possessions that ended in turnovers were all possessions that were in Chargers territory, and they were driving pretty good. The Ravens game, that last possession, they fumbled away when they were about to score. So that's a good point. These drives aren't like, it's not like they're just throwing interceptions at the very beginning. They were already about to score. So we'll get to a few more stats here. And I thought this was pretty crazy. You know, as aggressive as Andy can be sometimes, and he hasn't really had the situation where he's needed to because the offense has been so dominant, but they have yet to go for a fourth down this year, which is, you know, kind of the flip side, because, you know, that we've seen opposing offenses go for fourth down so much. They have the fourth best red zone conversion percentage as well, 80%. That's no surprise. But how about this? And this goes along with the Chiefs having the least amount of possessions in the NFL. They have the second fewest third down attempts in the NFL, but also the highest conversion percent of third downs in the NFL. And what that screams to me, that my takeaway from that stat, is that this offense has been so efficient. They just don't get in the third and fourth downs. They just don't. And that's why they haven't been able to go for fourth down yet. That makes sense. This team gets the first downs, first and second downs. And when they get to third down, they're getting the conversion on 64% of the time, which is a huge number. That's a great rate. I mean, that's almost two thirds of the time. Every, you know, two out of every three attempts, you're getting a first down on third down. I just can't stop that. And it's going to be continue to be hard to, because they played some pretty good defenses already. And I know there's going to be tough defenses coming up, but there's also going to be some lighter defenses that they'll have a little less trouble than against us. You know, some of the other teams they, yeah, I just think the offense has been dominant. I think that's the main takeaway. Not much, you know, there's not much analyzing that needs to be said about that.
Yeah. I think the offensive dominance has been, you know, maybe overlooked or slept on a little bit, because there have been times where they looked out of sync. You know, last week, Patrick Mahomes looked uncomfortable in the pocket. Early in the season, the run game, the timing was off. It didn't seem like Clyde was getting to where he needed to be when the offensive line was expecting, and vice versa. So I think there have been some issues on offense. But again, throw out the turnovers and everything else is basically a non-issue. Everything, they're basically unstoppable with or without turnovers. And again, if they clean up the turnovers, this is going to be just a show for the rest of the season. Let's talk about the offensive line specifically, though. I think some of the offensive stats really point to the massive overhaul that they've put in on the offensive line and how those guys are starting to come together. I was alluding to it just now, but really, I think we should have all expected the first couple games for this offensive line to still be finding their way, learning how to play together, learning how to play as a offensive line, learning how to play with Mahomes and with Clyde. But if you look at some of these stats, like the Chiefs are now eighth in the league in rushing yards. They're fourth in yards per carry at 5.1 yards per carry. And they have the fourth least sacks allowed per dropback. Those stats indicate to me that this offensive line is arguably already a top five unit, and they're still improving and they have room to improve. They've faced four really good defenses. They've made some rookie mistakes here and there, but we hope that this line could be a top offensive line. I think they're pretty much almost there.
Man, especially when you're talking about in the run game, they are mowing dudes over. We already talked about it a little bit. And the one stat that really points to it, that is a really flip of the script from last year, shout out Football Outsiders. They have a great stat. It's called power success rate. And if you guys have followed AP, you've heard me talk about it a few times over the last year. Last year, I'll real quick, this is what power success rate is. It's the percentage of runs on third or fourth down, 2 yards or less to go, that achieved a first down or touchdown. Also includes runs on first and goal or second and goal from the 2 yard line or closer. So basically, short yardage conversions when it matters, right? Not a second and one, not a second and two, when it matters. Third downs, red zone. The Chiefs this year have converted on those situations 100% of the time. And that's tied with a few teams for the number one rate in the league. Last year, they were dead last in that category by a comfortable margin too, but they were about 50% last year. So one every two runs was not getting converted in those situations. That is a huge difference, and you saw it against the Eagles. It was very apparent how many third and ones, third and twos did they get into where they just easily converted with a run up the middle. I mean, this Chiefs offensive line is moving people right now, and I like your take. I like the top five offensive line take. The only reason I'm going to push back on it a little bit is the pass pro still isn't great. It still isn't perfect. I think Mahomes at times, like you mentioned, he hasn't helped him out sometimes with his pocket presence. We saw it against the Eagles. You know, Orlando Brown, actually, according to PFF, gave up three quarterback hits. He did not have a great game himself. Lucas Niang gave up a sack. That guy actually got called, you know, didn't actually count because of defensive holding penalty, but it was a clean sack. You know, it was him getting beat. And he also had a holding penalty, too. That was pretty crucial on the pass protection. So they're not perfect in pass protection, so maybe that's how they don't, you know, get in the top five, because there's some good offensive lines in the NFL, but they're getting there, and the thing is, the crazy part is they have a lot more time to go and improve. This team needs to be ready for the playoffs. It doesn't matter how good they are right now. And the way this offensive line's trending, I mean, they're going to be one of the best, no doubt, but in the postseason. I mean, it's really trending that way.
Yeah, you talked about the growing pains, and, yeah, Creed Humphrey giving up a sack to Javon Hargrave this week. that guy has been a monster so far this season. So sometimes you're going to lose some. Last week they lost some to Joey Bosa. I get it. But for the volume in this passing game, that's why I like this sacks per dropback, fourth lowest in the league, because it factors in the fact that the Chiefs throw the ball a lot and Mahomes drops back a lot. And he's probably not the easiest guy to block for. You know, he's extending plays. He's moving around the pocket. He's getting crazy depth sometimes and sometimes taken off out of a pocket he doesn't need to. You know, there's going to be some of those sacks and pressures that are on Mahomes and some where it's just going to take some time for these guys to get used to playing together. But, yeah, I think you have to be encouraged to where they are at this point in the season. I think they're ahead of where we thought they should be.
Yeah, well, real quick, too, on Mahomes, you're saying that, you know, he's kind of hard guy to block for, which I totally agree with. They're only going to get more used to him, to how to block for him. You know, they're only going to get more used to, hey, this play, you know, we got to keep blocking. We can't just think that he got rid of the ball real quick and can stop blocking. So that's only going to get better and better as the season goes. Like I said, it's looking really good for the offensive line for sure.
Well, speaking of an area that hopefully will be getting better as the season goes along, let's talk a little bit about the defense. Ron, you've got the defensive stats here, but you know, I think what you pulled up was that they were the second worst in yards per carry running the football, right? So everybody's been talking about the run defense and how big of an issue this has been. So, Ron, do you see the run defense as a big issue, or is that just kind of the popular sentiment right now?
It's an easy thing to kind of point to and say, oh, yeah, you know, teams run the ball, they can keep the ball longer, Mahomes can stay off the field, and hey, you know, to be honest with you, it has kind of worked in terms of that. Like we said, the Chiefs have the least amount of possession in the entire NFL right now. That kind of shows you that time of possession does limit a little bit how many opportunities they get. But the run defense is not necessarily the problem, because you need to be better at pass defense, and we'll get to that. But I really like this wrinkle you have on the run defense stats, because I think this is important to note, and I'll let you go ahead and take it away on the little nuance in this conversation about run defense.
Yeah, if you just look at the raw numbers, they're letting opponents rush for the second most yards per carry, and they've given up a couple of big rushing performances so far this season, and it's got everybody in a panic about this run defense and how, you know, they just are going to get run over like the 2018 team or some previous years where run defense was just a complete issue across the board. So I'm going to argue that it may not be as simple as that. So if you look at just rushing yards allowed by the Chiefs defense against opposing running backs only, they've given up 86 yards per game, almost 87 yards per game, and a 4.88 yards per carry. The yards per carry still isn't phenomenal, but 86 yards per game on average, no 100-yard rushers allowed from any running back. If you took out the quarterback rushing yards, they gave up 116 yards rushing to running backs against Cleveland, 142 to Baltimore, 58 to the Chargers, and 31 to Philly. So this is a team that is not getting run over by running backs. So maybe it's not a run game problem. What they have a problem with are designed runs to quarterbacks. And they got killed by Lamar. And they got killed by Hurts a little bit in that regard this week.
Yeah, and the key point there, the key word right there is design runs by quarterbacks. Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson are probably going to be two of the quarterbacks you see that they get used the most in that area in the NFL, especially on the Chiefs' schedule. We got Josh Allen coming up, and hey, he's a great runner, but the Bills do not just put him out there like they do, like the Ravens and Eagles do with Lamar and Jalen Hurts. They don't give him on a bunch of zone reads, a bunch of design runs, maybe on the goal line. That is where they'll maybe use him, his big body as a battering ram a little bit, but he's going to be scrambling a lot. And hey, that's still going to be an issue to deal with, but the design runs have been really what's been killing the Chiefs, quarterback design runs. And they really don't see a lot of those kind of offenses again for the rest of the season. If you kind of look in the schedule, it's going to be a lot more traditional runs. Now, there's still some good rushing offenses, even if they're traditional. But like you're saying, you know, the running back, giving up the running back yards hasn't been necessarily the problem. It's been the quarterback rushing that's kind of given them trouble so far.
Now, there might be some people that listen to that and think that, hey, we're making excuses for this defense, or we're trying to argue that the defense has been better than it has been. We're not. We're trying to make the case that they're not, it's not the run defense that's a problem. Look at some of the past defensive stats, and you know, you start to see that this is a broader problem than just them not being able to line up and stop the run.
Yes, and thank you for setting me up, because this is where I'll kind of real quick before I get to the stats, just say, you know, because I think I have been maybe trying to defend the defense a little bit, and I think game by game, my point has been that the offense hasn't helped them out enough, knowing that the defense is bad and you can't let them try to win you a game. But the Eagles game really discouraged me, man. I really thought this was going to be a game that we kind of have a get-right game. You know, Eagles don't have great receiving core. Devontae Smith and a bunch of other guys. And Devontae Smith's a rookie still. You know, you'd think your veteran corners could handle him a little better. You'd think our defensive line would get better pass rush against a really, you know, 4 out of 5 starting offensive linemen missing. But no, it's been a problem. The pass defense has been a huge problem, and the stats back it up. Third highest yards per attempt allowed, passing attempts allowed this year. The 6th lowest pressure percentage this year, according to Pro Football Reference. 5th fewest sacks as well. And here's the kicker right here. And it is kind of skewed a little bit, because they have not faced as many possessions as most NFL teams, because of how long possessions last against the Chiefs defense, because they can't get off the field. They have faced the 3rd fewest third down attempts. But what that also tells you is that they can't get a stop on 1st or 2nd down. You need to get into those 3rd down attempts, and they're just not doing it right now. And even when they do, the team goes for it on 4th down. They're allowing 6 of 8 4th down conversions, I believe, this year. But the 8 attempts is the most 4th down attempts too. So, you know, that is also offense, or opposing offenses, knowing they don't want to give the ball back to Mahomes. So it's a little bit of a, you know, it sucks, but, you know, it's kind of the con of playing with a great offense, is the other offense wants to be super aggressive too. But here's a kicker, though. Most yards per drive, points per drive. So that's efficiency right there. That kind of shows you. And the red zone conversion percentage is still bad. It's still 79%, although it did get better against the Eagles, even though the Eagles kind of helped them out more than it was the Chiefs. That first drive, you know, Hurts misses Ertz on a wide open touchdown, even though Chris Jones did get pressure on him. They had they went for 4th down, and then got a delay of game, so they had to settle for a field goal. Yeah, the Eagles didn't really help in that regard, but this team, this defense needs to get stops in certain situations. They need to get big time sacks. They need to make big plays, you know, interceptions, whether it be, you know, in the red zone, just making a stop. They just have not done it enough this year. It just has not been happening. And you know what? I'm going to say it right now, Stags. And I didn't tell you this before the podcast, but I believe this. If we had to go to the playoffs right now, if for whatever reason, the NFL season stopped and the playoffs started right now, I don't think this defense is good enough for them to win a Super Bowl. I just don't. I don't. If they're playing like this, by the time the January playoffs roll around, they're not going to win a Super Bowl. They have to get better. I mean, there's just no doubt about it.
It's painful to hear out loud. I can't make a strong case against it, though. To me, it feels like it's a game of whack-a-mole, trying to figure out what's going on with this defense, right? It's first, it feels like it's the run defense. I don't think that's really the issue. Now the pass defense is an issue. So I'm looking at all the reasons that the pass defense might be an issue. Tell me, is this possible? Is it possible that it's because of slow linebackers, bad pass rush, a lot of miscommunication, cornerbacks being overmatched, safeties not being athletic enough? Is it possible that all of those things are issues, Ron?
It is possible, because sometimes it feels like that's exactly what's happening. But to defend the pass rush a little bit, I do think the opposing offenses have really hammered home quick passes to the flat, end arounds too, you know, quick play action plays, you know, RPOs. They have been hammering those because of how slow the linebackers are, for one, and the miscommunications in the secondary. I mean, how many times has it been a wide open receiver in the past few weeks? And I know I gave him a little more leeway in the Chargers game because, hey, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams might be one of the best receiver duos in the NFL currently. But you're talking about a very minimally, you know, I'm not a huge fan. You know, Devontae Smith is a great receiver, but the rest of the Eagles receiver core should not be making our secondary look that bad. And they were going all over the field on him. They punch a wide open passes. So I think the main thing right now is the back end. I think the front end still gets a little bit of, you know, because they do create pass rush at some points. You know, Mike Dana's had 3 sacks this year. Good for him. They've all kind of been hustle sacks, but it does seem like the main thing right now is the back end, is just whether it's the linebackers being slow or there's miscommunication between the cornerbacks and safeties. it has just not been good, and they've just not been holding up their bargain. And that's what needs to be good. If the pass defense is good and the run defense is bad, it's actually a lot more, you know, feasible to get over that and kind of play through it rather than the other way around, which it is right now. And that's why you're seeing teams kind of just run all over, go up and down the field on the Chiefs defense.
Yeah, it's frustrating to watch because, you know, as you know, this is the ultimate team sport, right? So you need all the different parts of the defense to complement each other. The pass rush can't get home if the quarterback has a wide open player to throw it to in 2 seconds or less. It's just never going to happen. On the flip side, you know, with no pass rush, it puts the corners, a lot of stress on the corners. The quarterback can step into the ball or step into the pocket and throw a clean ball, and a perfect pass will beat perfect coverage every time. Now, they haven't had perfect coverage that often, but it still puts the corners in a very difficult position. I think the most notable for me has been the slow reactions and the slow or lack of athleticism in the linebacker position. They're really missing Willie Gay Jr. I think there's really been some growing pains for Nick Bolton. And I think we were seeing a lot too much of Ben Neiman. But you know, I think that's something that's going to be fixed a little bit, right? So Willie Gay is going to come in the next couple of weeks, probably. And the linebacking group will start to look a little bit better. The corners looking overmatched, you know, you've got Charvarius Ward, who's a pretty competent corner, and that sort of shifts the roles for everybody else back maybe to where the team wants them to be. Maybe that helps a little bit. From the safety position, you know, we're all kind of holding our breath waiting for Sorensen to take less snaps and for Juan Thornhill to get more. I just saw a great stat from Arrowhead Live on Twitter. Tyrann Mathieu has played 94 snaps at free safety, which is 43% of his snaps, compared to 16% in 2019 and 24% in 2020. So they're really using Tyrann Mathieu deep because they're not playing Juan Thornhill. And there's this whole cascade, you know, problem that happens because of that, right? So you're using Tyrann Mathieu deep, where he's not bad, but it's not, you know, his best area of the field. His best area of the field is closer to the line of scrimmage. So you're playing him a little bit out of position. And now there's nobody to cover tight ends and running backs in the flat and come up and make plays because Tyron's coming from that much deeper. So, you know, in a perfect world, you'd have Thornhill deep. You'd have Mathieu closer to the line of scrimmage. You'd have, you know, Ward and Hughes or Baker as your starting corner. I'm sorry, Ward and Snead as your starting corner. And Hughes and Baker would play a little bit less or play more in the slot. So really, there's a lot of people playing out of position in the secondary. You've got linebackers missing their one athletic player. And then the pass rush is just not getting home. Certainly haven't seen the production from Chris Jones or Jaron Reed that we would like to. I think if you watch both of them closely enough, at least this week, I saw a couple of positive signs. Jaron Reed nearly had a sack. He had another a good play in the backfield. Chris Jones had some pressures that'll go overlooked, like you mentioned, that they don't show up in the box score. But really, it's, again, I got to go back to this idea of defensive whack-a-mole. It's, you know, where's the problem? And it's here. It's a different problem in a different area of the field on nearly every play, it feels like. And so it's not going to be a simple fix. It's not going to be an overnight fix on this defense.
Yeah, and real quick, just to add to that, I like that stat you pulled from Arrowhead Live. That is pretty crazy that he's playing nearly half a snap to free safety, because you're right. That is not where you want to be playing Mathieu. I mean, you're just kind of wasting his abilities at that point. And I think, you know, I tend to think Stacks or Spags. I think you know what you're doing too, but I tend to think Spags knows what he's doing. And why I say that is that it's starting to seem like maybe Thornhill just isn't he's not a starter. I mean, he doesn't have the ability in their eyes to be a starter. It's not about maybe even how well Sorensen knows the defense or how well of a camp he had. It might just be that they don't trust. You know, maybe they trusted 2019 Thornhill to patrol the back end, but maybe they don't trust him now. And, you know, you do see some times where he just doesn't look as athletic as he probably should. And maybe that injury just kind of set him back athletically so much that he's just not the same player anymore. And when you don't have that athleticism, it makes you a lot worse, because you can't make up for stuff you know, as a young player that maybe, you know, you could have when you had, you know, the 4.4 speed he had or whatever. So it's starting to kind of, you know, we got to get discouraged about it a little bit. I hate to say it, but it's just, it's starting to feel like maybe Thornhill's just not, right now at least, he's just not the player that we all kind of think he is. And we saw in 2019, he's just not that guy right now.
Yeah, it's tough to, again, that's not news you want to hear said out loud, and it doesn't hit the ear well. But, you know, when you watch where Thornhill struggled this week, you know, the couple most visible plays were he missed a tackle on Hurts, I think, when he was on a design run. And, you know, some of those, that's not going to be his strong suit. I mean, Thornhill's not a bad tackler for a free safety, but that's a big clarification for a free safety. He should be roaming that defensive backfield, not trying to press up at the line of scrimmage. I think you know, there's something to be said for these guys playing out of position. Thornhill played 31 snaps this week on defense, so 42% of the snaps, where Sorensen played 99% and Tyrann Mathieu played 100%. So, you know, he's clearly the third safety in their eyes, and he comes in, you know, on pass heavy downs, and you know, I think they're comfortable with him in that role, and they're so far not budging off of that. So we'll see if that changes as the season goes on, you know, but something's got to change, and it can't just be, you know, getting Ward and Gay back. There's got to be something else that changes for this defense for them to get where they want to be. But tell you what, this is a good place to take a break. We'll hear from our sponsors. When we come back, we have a few more stats for you, some individual stats, some special team stats. And then we'll get to more of your questions, because we did have some good questions this week. We definitely don't want to ignore those. There's just a lot to take away, a lot to talk about on this Victory Monday. So stick with us on the Out of Structure podcast. We'll be right back with you.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. Thanks for sticking with us. The Out of Structure podcast. I'm Matt Stagner again here with Ron Kopp Jr. We're talking about some statistics that may have snuck up on us now, just almost at the quarter point of the Chiefs season and the NFL season this year. Let's talk special teams, everybody's favorite topic. Hell, half of this roster is constructed just for Dave Tobe and his special team. What have you seen on the special team side statistically so far?
Yeah, it's been good. It's been really good special teams wise. Look at Harrison Butker. You know, we kind of talked about the extra points, you know, being a struggle of his. He missed six last year. And we're probably going to jinx him, but he has not missed a single one this year. He is 17 for 17, which is also the most extra points attempted in the league. So good for him. And then also his holder, shout out Tommy Townsend. He hasn't been playing too much, and it's not of any fault of his own. The Chiefs, we saw it on Sunday. They didn't punt once, and they actually have the fewest punts in the entire league right now. It's six punts. And that just shows you how dominant the offense has been, but they've been no bad punts yet, so that's good. Just not a lot of punts to go off of. So, yeah, how about that? How about the kicker and punter kind of having a good start to the season? That's always good to have your special teams rounded up like that.
Yeah, it's good to have a clean start for the season from those guys. Not a whole lot of takeaways there. We're glad to see that whatever extra point issues that Harrison Butker had last season have not so far carried over to this season. And yeah, Tommy Townsend's been fine as a punter. Whenever he's had to punt, it might be a pretty sweet job that he's got as the punter. I think we got a question to that regard from one of you. They asked, how do I get a job like Tommy Townsend on a day like this? That was Patrick Mahomes, not a Chiefs fan, on Twitter. I think that's a good call out. You know, it's a pretty sweet gig to be a punter on a Patrick Mahomes-led offensive team. And, you know, really haven't seen, you know, much to complain about on the special team side. There was a decent – one pretty good return from the Eagles this week, but they haven't given up any touchdowns or anything like that on the return side. Been a little sloppy. I think you saw the Pringle fumble this week. But, you know, all in all, they've been solid on special teams. You'd like to see some more game-changing returns, of course, but not a whole lot to complain about on the special team side.
Yeah, and those returns are probably coming. But let's get into some individual stats, because I'm going to start off with mine. I'll let you kind of hit the other three that you have there. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the guy that we all started really questioning over, you know, after the first 2 weeks, and you know, Staggs here has always been tried and true in his love for Clyde and his belief in him. And no, I think everyone realistically, you know, we kind of all had some questions about it, but you know, hey, he could always get better. It's only two games in the season. Well, guess what? He has been a lot better over the last two games, and I got some great stats to prove that. And so here we go. I'm going to just start with the yards per carry rate. So first 2 weeks, Clyde was averaging 3.3 yards a carry. That is 6.5 over the last 2 weeks. How about 1.5 yards after contact per attempt the first 2 weeks? That's up to 3.5 last 2 weeks. So I'm splitting them up. 2 weeks here, 2 weeks there, not total. He only forced one missed tackle per PFF the first 2 weeks. How about 9 the last 2 weeks? And that's all individual. You know, it's not about the offensive line. How dominant they've been is separate from those kind of stats I just gave you. And how about this? You know, this goes to the offensive line too, but he had not a single 10-plus yard rush the first 2 weeks. He's had 7 the last 2 weeks, including 3 that went for 15-plus against Philadelphia. And also, somehow, he didn't have any rushes that ended in a first down the first 2 weeks. Well, he's had 9 the last 2 weeks. So all those stats to say, Clyde has been really good the last 2 weeks, along with the offensive line. But he has started to, I think, really kind of, you know, get the shake on a little bit, show his finesse a little more than the first 2 weeks. He wasn't kind of breaking as many tackles as he is now. And he's on pace to have a really good season now, Staggs.
Yeah, I mean, he's top 10 in the league already in rushing right now, which, again, it sounds weird to say out loud considering how bad the start to the season was for him. He's on pace for 1,164 yards and 5 touchdowns on the ground this year. Obviously, his career best is in his only other career year. He had 803 yards and 4 touchdowns last year. So he's definitely trending towards a better season this year even than he had last year. And again, I argue that he was pretty good last year. And he's getting better. I do think that you can really visibly see how much more decisive and more comfortable he is in this offense over the last couple of weeks. And it shows in the results. I mean, you know, he's efficient in yards per carry. He's averaging 5 yards per carry total right now. That's sort of the gold standard for running backs, right? So if you know you can give it to Clyde and get 5 yards on average every single time, this offense can do whatever they want to. And so I think that's a really nice turnaround from Clyde, and now he's on pace for a pretty good season.
Yeah, so we'll get to some secondary receivers. Shout out Darrell Williams, too. I think he's been running pretty well this year, but Clyde's definitely the best running back in the room. Still would like to see some Jerick McKinnon, though. I would like to see maybe just a few carries sprinkled in, but they just – I don't know. It is nice to see Clyde as a first-round pick get used the way he is. You know, don't waste that pick. You know, hammer that, you know, hammer him until – you know, during his rookie contract. But anyway, let's get to some individual stats from the receivers. Now, Byron Pringle has 7 catches for 104 yards this year. That's on pace for 416 yards and 4 touchdowns, because he had the touchdown against Baltimore. That's a pretty good pace for him, considering his career best is 170 yards and a touchdown. That's some pretty good numbers for Byron Pringle. And I don't think we could have expected much more from Pringle. I don't know what you think about that, Staggs, but I mean, yeah. I don't know how much big a numbers he could have even put up in the first place.
Yeah. Hey, those are DeMarcus Robinson numbers. I mean, that's, yeah, that's elite exactly. Production right there. No, we talked about these secondary receivers and how they haven't done a whole lot. You know, again, we're being critical here, but you know, if you look at just the raw numbers, you know, Pringle is about to exceed his career best probably in his next game or two. So, you know, he's certainly been, you know, a small factor. You know, it's good enough for a fourth wide receiver role, and I think that I think he's proven his worth there, and he proves his worth on special teams. So, you know, great. I mean, they got a role for him, and he's producing to expectations for that role. If he ends this year with 400 or 500 yards and 4 or 5 touchdowns, I think we would all be pretty okay with that, especially with a potential, you know, game changer coming in. Now, speaking of game changers, Mecole Hardman, we had maybe hoped would be more of a game changer. And if you looked at the way he started his career, he was making big plays. He didn't have a lot of volume of plays in his rookie year, but he put up, you know, 560 yards and 6 touchdowns. And you thought, okay, this is a guy that's got a future as a huge playmaker. We haven't seen that so far this year. It seems like the Chiefs, you know, really wanted to make him at number 2 wide receiver. They really wanted to get him the volume and the normal, quote unquote, normal wide receiver type plays. He's done that in one game this year. I think his performance against Baltimore showed some short to intermediate routes, some you know, run a route, catch the ball, move the chains, 5 for 55, I think is what he ended up with against Baltimore. But other than that, it really looks like he is a gadget player. And I think we mentioned this earlier. If they've really put him back into that gadget player role, he's a complimentary player on this team. You know, he can, when he gets the ball in his hands, he is lightning and is fun to watch. But it really feels like they're starting to give up on this idea of him being a quote unquote true number 2, number 3 wide receiver. And he is that complimentary gadget piece, which is perfectly fine as long as you've got 2 good receivers ahead of him, plus Travis Kelce. And I think if Josh Gordon comes in and he can be that guy, that number 2 wide receiver, the 3rd receiving target, then all of a sudden you've got something. And Mecole being in that role is perfectly, perfectly adequate. I think you pointed out that Mecole had over half his catches and almost half of his yards on passes that did not cross the line of scrimmage. So it really backs up that concept that he's a gadget player and a competent one and a fast one and an exciting one with the ball in his hands, but he might just be that.
Yeah. So one of his catches all year the pass has traveled in the air 9 or more or 10 or more yards past the line of scrimmage. All 12 of his 13 catches have either been behind the line of scrimmage or between 0 and 9 yards from the line of scrimmage. So that just kind of shows you that he has just not been the deep threat that we kind of maybe thought he could be. It kind of is surprising to me too, though, because you'd think Andy would have been able to scheme something up for him a little bit to be in that role. And the last thing I'll say on the number 2 and 3 receiver thing is, you know, Dave Tobe is the assistant head coach, and he was the one kind of he was asked about Josh Gordon. And, you know, Andy Reid's not going to give much up, but Dave Tobe might have let it slip. He said, when Josh Gordon gets called up, we're expecting him to be a 2 or 3 receiver for us. He used those exact words, which is pretty high expectations for a guy that you just signed off the street. But I think, like we kind of mentioned earlier, that just kind of shows you that this team is kind of banking on him to be a really big part of this offense, mainly because the rest of the offensive weapons are just kind of for him.
Yeah, I mean, there's a spot for him there. And again, I think he makes that offense that much better if it works out. And that really takes some of the pressure off of Mecole. He doesn't have to be that number 2 wide receiver. Just has to do what he does best, and the Chiefs will continue to scheme up ways to have him do that. The last individual stats, we got to talk about Mahomes. So far this season, Patrick Mahomes is completing 72.3% of his passes. His career average is 66.5. So he's been as accurate and as efficient as ever, and a little bit better there. He's on pace with the stats he has so far. He's on pace for 4,872 yards, 56 touchdowns, 16 interceptions. That compares pretty favorably to that 2018 season when he had 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns, and 12 interceptions. So obviously the interceptions are up a little bit, but everything else is as good or better than we've ever seen from Mahomes. And it's a great time to be a Chiefs fan with him producing like that.
Yeah, and we've mentioned it already, but they played some tough defenses too. They turned the ball over a lot. I think those things are going to keep kind of trending away, you know. I think they're going to play worse defenses. They're not going to turn the ball over as much. and it might even lead to even more production. So I could see him even outpacing these stats, although the 56 touchdowns would be ridiculous, but we'll see how that goes. All right. Well, yeah. So let's get into a few questions then. Jake Wilson, our guy on Twitter at Jake for now. Do we know the Chiefs' process for deciding whether to challenge a play? Because the best play of Ben Neiman's career ended up being a missed opportunity. It feels like a first half timeout is worth the gamble for a possible red zone turnover. I totally agree. I was at the game, as I mentioned, and I saw them kind of calm down. I think twice about it, but looking back, Ben Neiman did a really good job getting his hand in there and causing a fumble. It was a fumble in my eyes. And I'm surprised the Chiefs didn't think to look at that or even take the second two. Andy, I don't know what the process is. And my belief is that there's someone up in the booth in the coach's box looking at it, and they'd call down to Andy and tell him. So either that guy needs to get on his horse a little more and check that, or Andy's got to, you know, if he sees that happen and there's any question, he needs to chill out, you know, in terms of like, maybe, hey, just take a timeout, like you mentioned, Jake, and challenge the play. Cause I mean, that would have been a huge game changing play. They scored on the next play. And like you said, it would have been a great career or a great highlight for Ben Neiman. And maybe we would have felt a little better about him. I think Ben Neiman actually played a pretty good game yesterday, I will say, but yeah, so I think that does need to happen. I think the Chiefs need to be on top of that a little more.
Yeah, whoever the guy in the Chiefs coaching suite that is supposed to make that call was probably in the bathroom or on a beer run or something at that.
Right.
No, I think what happened was the Eagles got up and snapped the ball really quick on the next play. I think they knew that it was a fumble, but they moved as quickly as they could, and the Chiefs just did not react in time. So they were a step slow on that one. I don't know that it's a process issue more than just a – you know, maybe they didn't get a good look at it or they were just a step slow on getting that that challenge flag out. But you're right. You're right, Jake. There's absolutely no reason you don't gamble in that situation. Absolutely challenge that. There's no question about it. That is you use your challenge there. Who cares if you lose a timeout at the end of the first half?
Well, yeah, especially in the red zone defense, right? I mean, like this team needs stops in the red zone, and that would have been a big one. But yeah, I think that was they needed to call that. I think for sure. I think they needed to get that in.
Absolutely. If you look at that play, just that play alone, plus the garbage time touchdown at the end, if you take those two touchdowns off the board for the Eagles, all of a sudden we're talking about a brilliant defensive performance by the Chiefs and a huge blowout. So I mean, you know, it's one of those things. If you sometimes the results and the process don't necessarily match up. You talked about it earlier with the red zone defense. Yeah, they were better, but some of that was because of penalties on the Eagles and other, you know, quirky things that happened. So you take the results when they work out in your favor. If not, maybe you're left thinking, what if? So now some more good questions from y'all about the roster and maybe this really is a chance for us to revisit our bubble watch that we've had through the preseason. So the first question from Domsh, Ethan, who on the active roster gets cut to make room for Josh Gordon? And do we anticipate that will be a receiver? So Ron, who do you think they cut for Josh Gordon? To me, it seems pretty clear.
Yeah, it is clear. It's Darius Fountain. You know, you maybe kept him around because he's that X type, that bigger type that you could maybe, if he gets better, you could call him up and maybe he does produce for you. Well, that's what you're hoping Josh Gordon does. So there's not really any reason to keep him around. And so hope you get on the practice squad. But what do you think, Stags? Do you think Gordon could actually get up to that wide receiver two, wide receiver three spot where he's actually taking snaps away from DeMarcus Robinson or Mecole Hardman?
Yeah, you know, I think that's the interesting angle on this too, is not just whose roster spot is he going to take, but whose role on game day is he going to take? And you're right. I think Darius Fountain's the obvious choice in that he's a wide receiver who doesn't really play special teams. There's only room for so many of those guys on the roster, and they'd better be producing on offense. Fountain's been inactive every week so far. Maybe there's enough distance between him and his preseason production that he can slip through waivers and get to the practice squad, and they can get Gordon on the active roster. But once he's on the active roster, then what? You know, is this going to be a guy that all of a sudden is – Sammy Watkins or Sammy Watkins plus, is he going to be able to keep, you know, DeMarcus Robinson off the field, Because really, if you look at who's been eating up snaps for the Chiefs on wide receiver and how have they produced, Robinson gets a ton of snaps and the production just really hasn't been there. He had 67% of the offensive snaps this week and didn't record a catch. You know, I think there's a pretty obvious opportunity there for somebody to come in and take at least a good portion of those snaps away from DeMarcus Robinson, relegate him to more of a reserve special teams type role where Marcus Kemp is as well. So I think there are snaps and opportunities and targets for the taking. I'm not sure he's going to take away. Josh Jordan's probably not going to take away from Mecole Hardman's role. I think they're going to continue to try to feature Mecole Hardman in the ways that they currently feature Mecole Hardman. But I think Josh Jordan can certainly take some of DeMarcus Robinson's role, maybe a little bit of Byron Pringle's role, and in any offensive snaps that you would have given to Marcus Kemp. Just give all of that role to Josh Jordan and see what happens. Worst case scenario, he's a 6'3" decoy out there, you know, running routes and keeping some attention. Best case scenario, he makes some big plays for this team.
Yeah, they definitely didn't help the fan base's irrational probably confidence in Josh Jordan being a huge, you know, my confidence as well being a huge part of this offense. Tyrann Mathieu calling him Megatron after one practice, you know, all that stuff in the media last week. Yeah, it seems like the team is really buying into Gordon. So I you know, it shouldn't be surprising if he does turn out to be a really a big piece of this offense, because the team is sure acting like he's going to be. So, but let's move on to Chief Smash Forever's question. I love this question because, you know, it's smart to look at the bottom of the roster. He asked, who's the player at bottom? Who's the player at bottom 45 to 53 players that has done more than you thought? Is Dana coming into his own? Mike Dana, who has 3 sacks so far this year. He seems to be productive each week. Stags, who are the players kind of in that fringe where they're not, you know, they're sometimes they're even inactive on game day roster? That in that range of players, who is kind of impressing this year in your eyes?
So the question says the 45 to 53, right? So quite conveniently, I happen to do a series on Arrowhead Pride called Market Movers, where I rank the players according to my eye and my fully subjective opinion every single week, 1 to 53 plus the practice squad. And so looking at 45 to 53, those guys are, you know, Dorian O'Daniel, Mike Remmers, Nick Allegretti, Andrew Wiley, Chad Henne, Dreese Fountain, Armani Watts, Austin Blythe, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, and Darius Harris. If I had to give a nickname to those 8 players, I would call them the inactive list, because that's pretty much what you see each week. So not a lot to glean from that group. Dorian O'Daniel got his first 2 snaps on defense for the season this week after Ben Neiman went in the concussion protocol. But not a whole lot we can take from that group. So I'm going to go up a tier and look at the bottom of the roster that actually is active on game days. Now we're talking about Colin Saunders, Marcus Kemp, Chris Lammond, Ben Neiman, Joshua Kando. I think those are sort of the guys that are towards the bottom of the roster, not through any fault of their own necessarily, but just that's their role on this team. Of that group, you know, I haven't seen any huge positive surprises. I think Colin Saunders has looked fairly competent in the snaps that he's had. He hasn't really had any production yet, but, you know, some decent signs out of him. On the positive side, Josh Kando and another guy who's pretty close on my list is Alex Okafor. Those guys, I think, have not been super impressive yet. Alex Okafor I had on the losers, the winners and losers list this week, because his production just hasn't been there. And he had a silly penalty this week that really cost the team. So, you know, not a ton from this bottom group to be super excited about. Chris Lammons has been great on special teams, other than the penalty he had this week, which set the team back, but he hasn't gotten in on defense at all. So, do you see anybody in this range? I'm showing you my list on the screen now. Do you see anybody in this range that's really a standout for you?
Well, Chris Lammons would have been it before this week, like you said. I mean, he's still been a really good special teams player. I didn't realize how good of a special teams player he was. Tobe makes him talks about him like he's one of the best gunners in the league. And he's proven it, you know, so far this season. That was a bad special teams penalty last or last night on the field goal attempt, I believe. But yeah, I mean, Colin Saunders, I had really high hopes for. Like you said, he hasn't really produced. I mean, he's had good snaps, though. I remember when I really dove into the defensive line film against Cleveland, he was holding his own against a really good offensive line, kind of pushing dudes around. So that was good to see. And I think he's just going to, you know, he's going to have some situational plays this year where he really does good. So, but yeah, no one's really been, you know, a great surprise. I'd say Alex Okafor has maybe not been as great as you'd maybe want, but you shouldn't expect too much from him either. I would say about Alex Okafor. So he had that late hit this week. That was just, what are you doing? I mean, that was a very bad sideline hit. But yeah, no, I think if I had to choose one to be Chris Lammons, I really didn't think he was as much of a special teams ace, but those guys are valuable. You know, those guys can win you games depending on, you know, how much, you know, depending on the game, depending on the situation. Sometimes those really good special teamers can be the reason, you know, a big play happens or something like that. So I'd say Chris Lammons.
Yeah, so something to watch this week as we're talking about the bubble is we're hoping that Willie Gay Jr. will be active in the next week or two. When he comes back, the obvious cut for him would be Darius Harris, who hasn't really gotten on the field a whole lot, but he's been that extra linebacker the Chiefs carried knowing that Willie Gay Jr. was hurt to start the season. So he could be one of those guys cut, but also now you've got Ben Neiman in the concussion protocol. If that is a prolonged thing, then maybe they've got to keep another linebacker on and shuffle somebody else out. As you can see, the backup offensive linemen who haven't really got a lot of run make up most of that bottom of the roster. So not a lot of movement down there. When I look at the market mover spreadsheet, the real movement is sort of in those 20s and 30s on this roster, because you know who the stars on this team are. They're pretty top heavy. But it's those guys in the middle, the Byron Pringles, the Mike Dana, the Daryl Williams, you know, Nick Bolton, DeAndre Baker, Jerick McKinnon, Noah Gray, Jody Fordson. I mean, that's where you're going to see some movement the rest of this year. Those are the guys who are poised to potentially make a step in the right direction and make an impact. It's probably not going to come deep from the bottom of the roster. And that really leads us to a question from Matt Crocker, Matt Crocker 89 on Twitter. Who's this year's MV Pinnell to bolster the defensive line? I'm going to take that to mean, is there somebody on the street that can come in and make a difference on this defensive line? Or is there somebody in-house that has not gotten any play yet that will drastically change that defensive lineman or the defensive line rotation? Will that improve based on personnel changes this year, Ron?
Yeah, the MV Pinnell. Who could forget, you know, our guy MV Pinnell that helped win a Super Bowl with his run stuffing. You know, also on the run defense is so much better when he's in. You know, I took this question a little differently. I just, you know, it was just a more of just a player coming in, no matter the position, that could just be a little bit of, you know, because Mike Pinnell wasn't a great player, a great starter or anything, but he was just that little bit of what they needed. Yeah, I think it's Josh Gordon. I think it's already on the team. I think, you know, it's a guy that, you know, Mike Pinnell wasn't a great, you know, this starter, this guy making a bunch of plays. He was just a little bit of what they needed on defense, and Gordon's might be what they need on offense, even though the offense, like we said, has been unstoppable. Adding Gordon in, the threat of him to the defense, you know, if he makes one big play every couple games, that's enough for a defense to have to worry about him. That'll open things up for Tyreek, Travis, and even Clyde. You know, there's going to be lighter boxes like we've seen this year so far, but even lighter if Gordon's out there. So, yeah, I'd say it's Josh Gordon. I think he's already on the team.
So the standard Twitter response to that is, can he play linebacker? Right? Isn't that
what yes, it is. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I don't see a ton of personnel help other than what we've already talked about on defense. I mean, I think it's kind of getting everybody back in the roles that you expected to start the season. If you can get Ward back at the outside cornerback position, you get Gay back at starting linebacker. Maybe you get Thornhill increasing his snaps a little bit and playing more deep and letting Matthew play more in the box. Just that shuffle will sort of get Frank Clark back on the field. I mean, I know he's either a forgotten man or the most hated man in town, depending on who you ask so far this season, but the guy does make a difference when he's healthy and on the field. So, you know, they're certainly missing some pieces that you could reshuffle and get a picture for what this defense should be at the end of the day. But I don't, yeah, I don't have a good bead on somebody who's going to come in and save the day. And I don't, so far, it doesn't look like those backup defensive ends. We talked about Josh Kando and Alex Okafor. I don't see either of those guys stepping up anytime soon. So buckle up. It's going to be an interesting rest of the season with the defense. It's probably just going to be a bottom half defense, and we're going to have a top end offense and some games that's going to matter and some games that won't. One final question I want to get to in from Rare Form at BigTest142 on Twitter. Are you worried about the Buffalo Bills? I think it's a good time for us to get a quick couple of thoughts on the upcoming game this week. The Buffalo Bills, it's time already to move on to next week. We're already past this victory Monday, and now we're thinking about the Bills. Looking forward to the challenge of playing the Bills, Ron.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Andy. So I think the Bills are going to be one of those teams that everyone kind of comes into the game like, holy cow, they've blown out their last three opponents. You know, they've looked dominant so far this year besides week one. You know, I'm going to push back on that a little bit. They have gotten very lucky with the opponents they played the last 3 weeks. Miami, when Tua got hurt. And actually, if you watch that game, Buffalo didn't even look that impressive. Somehow they still put up 35 points. They played Washington, and Washington's kind of been banged up this year. Their defense has been way worse than everyone thought it was. I mean, it's been awful. So that is not, you know, that wasn't the Washington defense we saw last year. And then they blew out the Texans last week without, you know, Tyrod Taylor in the lineup, which I think Tyrod Taylor makes them. So all of that to say, I think the Bills are a little bit of a fraudulent team this year. I don't think they are one of the best contenders in the AFC. I think they're going to be record-wise and playoff-wise, but I said it kind of from the beginning, and I'm standing by it. I just think this. I don't think they're going to be a team. I don't think they're an AFC championship type team. I don't see them competing with us in the AFC championship. I think they're going to be a good team. I think Josh Allen's a really good player, but that offense has been kind of out of sync this year. He hasn't been as good as he was last year. It just hasn't showed up on the scoreboard maybe as much because of who they played, and I think that's going to skew some opinions a little bit. But if you watch the games, the Bills haven't been that great this year, and I think the Chiefs will take care of business at home for sure.
So the Bills have two shutouts so far this season in their first four games, right? But they're against really terrible offenses. So, yeah, I think the Bills are not going to shut the Chiefs out. That's not going to happen. This is going to be more of an offensive battle between these two teams. So I wouldn't say super worried about them, but this is the biggest test of the season so far. I think this is the number one team other than the Chiefs in the AFC right now. They have to be the number one contender until someone proves otherwise. And I think we've seen that the Ravens are a really good team and a tough matchup for the Chiefs, but they're probably not an elite football team right now. The Browns aren't quite there yet either. And the Chargers. I mean, all the Chiefs opponents so far have been among the best teams in the AFC other than the Eagles, obviously. But I think the Bills are the best of that group. And so this is going to be a tough matchup for the Chiefs. They're going to present some challenges for this defense of Kansas City that's frankly not going to be ready for them. So be ready for a shootout this week. I don't think the Chiefs offense is going to be stopped all of a sudden just because they're facing the Buffalo defense. But they're going to need every one of those points probably to win this week. So,
yeah, I think the Browns are better than the Bills. I'll just say that right now. I'll put that on the record. And I think the Chargers are probably better than the Bills, too. I'll put that on the record right now. So you can hold me to it if the Bills do end up, you know, being way better than those teams. But I just want to put that out there because I do think the Bills are not as good as they were last year. And I think the Browns are that number two team in the AFC right now.
Duly noted. And we'll see how that plays out on Sunday. But in the meantime, let's get out of here for today. Everybody, thank you so much again for your time, for being with us today, for listening to all of the Airhead Pride Podcast Network podcasts. There's so much good content coming out from this group. Happy to be a part of it and happy to have you all listening with us. Please rate and review wherever you do that. And tune in next week to the Out of Structure Podcast and the Airhead Pride Podcast Network. Hopefully it's another Victory Monday podcast next week. So Ron, I will talk to you then, man.